session number 177747.
Yes, were you giving verbal orders to theoretical guns?
Yes, we were. Up, raise sights 200 yards, lower 200 yards, etc. We were bracketing.
And were you assuming that you had observation yourself, direct observation of the ground, or were you relying on interior?
We were in the observation post position.
So
yes.
You were the FOO.
That's
you
right.
Linked back to the battery. Mm.
We were the troop commander at an observation post, yes, with the lines back to the battery.
Were you also giving the orders in proper form?
Yes.
In voice code? And
yes. Yes, so many rounds, gunfire, all this kind of thing. That's right. We were the troop commander. I mean, the gun as a troop commander, as you know, is way out, miles away possibly from his guns, and the guns are way back at the gun position, and the orders come through radio or line. And I think in the case of these games on mock scenery, the gun position didn't exist at all. What happened was that your orders were conveyed direct to the chap with the puffer underneath the scenery, who put it up 200 yards or down 200 yards. So the gun element was missed out. It was an exercise in observation post work.
Do you remember having exercises in such things as firing off the map and how to do that?
Certainly, yes. Trying to think back to basics, it was a matter of being told that a target is there and having to try to get the correct location of there on an ordnance map, and then from your known position of your guns to work out the direction and the range and see how right you were. Yes, it's very difficult to reproduce this as a practical exercise, but this was the end. That was the object. To an extent, it was bound to be theoretical, but it was using maps. It was using not at that stage. I think where we were using aerial photographs. This did come later when I was really in action. But at this stage, we were not using aerial.
What about more tactical exercises? Do you remember doing those map games, for example?
Toots, tactical exercises without troops. Yes, the title comes back vividly. I can't remember precisely what we did on these toots.
Well, you can do a toot outside by being stood on a piece of ground and asked to say where you would put, shall we say, put a battery of guns or two of guns for a particular purpose.
Sure.
Having been given the outline of a situation.
That's right, yes.
Or you could do it on a sand
table. You could do it on scenery, yes, that's right. Mm. I think we did that mostly indoors. Mm. I think the Staffordshire countryside was not well equipped for doing it for real. There were not enough but significant hills to get the distant view.
And did you spend most of your time indoors, or did you spend most of it outdoors?
I should have thought it was a fair mix, about half and half. I mean, we spent a lot of time outdoors. We did a lot of drilling and a gun drill, all of course of which was out of doors. And my eye lights on 28th of October when I went out for the first time with the Beagles. So we chased Beagles over Staffordshire countryside. And all the time we were gradually being brought on to the prospect of commissioning. I'd been there about only a couple of weeks before we were getting officers' raincoat, shoes and shirts from Hector Powell in the village of Alton Towers, or Alton rather. We had to do homework. I've noted that in bed I prepared a lecturette on the use of cable. Presumably that was line, use of line telephony. I noted the next morning, a physical morning, gun drill and map reading in the open. Then the afternoon, people giving lecturettes to the group, to the squad. And so it goes on, Friday the 30th, cadets' battle scheme. Laundry from Rutum, from the Preoctu, has never arrived. This is the other side of army life, which goes little recorded, the fact that things don't always happen as they should. Losing kit and so on. Squad officer changes, new lieutenant takes over. Rush to the train. This must have been after 5 weeks. We had a 48-hour pass. I rushed to the train with a chap who has a first in geography, London University, and so on.
You mentioned that you had bedrooms rather than
yes
dormitory accommodation,
yeah.
And that you've been buying the sort of clothing that officers wore.
Yes.
Were you dining in the same way that officers would in a properly organised mess?
We did have messes, yes. I mean, they were not, in fact, the officers' mess. I mean, the staff of the Octu had their own mess. We were not dining with them. But we were waited on. We were served meals for the first time since I had joined the army. Yes. Yes, we were being told how to hold knives and forks, if you like, as well as being taught how to work guns.
So there was a process of socialisation in
yes,
the
yes.
officer corps.
Yes, that's right. I can't remember whether we had free access to drink. I don't think we did in the mess. I don't remember wines or whatever, and I don't remember there being any mess bills as such. But I think there were the beginnings of an element of that in terms of having to pay something once a week towards the rather more privileged messing that we were having compared with being gunners.
Was the food better?
Yes. Yes. Yes, the food was very good. Mind you, we were hungry people. We were working very hard and getting a lot of fresh air, and we were young. One ate anything. I don't remember so much use of a naffy as there had been as gunners, where we ate at about 6, and we were in the naffy by about 7:30, filling ourselves up in Lancashire. I don't remember this happening in quite the same way as Alton Towers.
One imagined it would have been discouraged.
There was a naffy. Yes, I think it would have been unnecessary and also to an extent discouraged, though I note that there was a naffy, but it was a quieter sort of naffy, because I put on the 4th of November that I was reading H.A.L. Fisher in the naffy, which would have been not very easy in the mill naffy in Bamburgh Bridge.
Well, presumably you had a fancy goods store, which would be the naffy would run.
What do you mean by fancy goods?
Things like shoelaces.
Oh, yes, the sort of minor essentials,
yes.
One had to provide. Blanco, this kind of thing, yes.
Possibly a naffy tea room rather than a naffy wet canteen.
Yes. Oh, it certainly wasn't a wet canteen. What I have memories of at the previous naffy was that you could buy pies and chips and things, but not, I think, here. And one did have, obviously, homework or the felt the need to study. I see we had a lecture from the medical officer on men's health. We had a film on combined operations, which were a relatively new concept then.
This was Mountbatten's outfit.
That's right. And it
Do you
would be,
remember anything about the film?
No, I don't.
Whether it had any impact?
Well, I don't think it could have much practical impact, but I mean, it was opening a slightly new military world to us, in which people actually did work together in battle and not just as gunners or as army. This, I can't remember the dating of the Dieppe raid, but presumably this was the first example that came across vividly of combined operations.
Was that in 1942?
It was in 42. Well, yes, around about this sort of time. And I begin learning artillery in bed. So we were obviously given pamphlets and books, some of which I've still got, on gun workings and the theory of artillery. And we're also beginning to have ABCA talks. An ABCA talk on Germany I've got down. Then an ABCA talk on the psychology of war. Then an afternoon playing soccer against another battery. And then a film in what we call grandly the banqueting hall, a film called Manhunt about the shooting of Hitler, enjoying life. Here the Americans have landed in North Africa. This was on the 9th of November. And this must have been, looking at the other end of North Africa, this must have been just after, what do you call it, the Montgomery thing, Alamein.
Torch landings.
Yes, that's right.
Were you generally aware of what was going on in the wider world in the war?
Well, we were as aware as official sources could let us be, I think, and in the absence of, I mean, not knowing what one didn't know, one felt well informed. Perhaps one wasn't as well informed as one thought, but there were no obvious gaps. We thought we knew what was happening. We were talking a few minutes ago about the use of maps and map work. I see that we went out on Tuesday the 10th of November and actually made a contour map of the deer path with our own instruments. The deer park itself tells something about the flavour of Alton Towers. More good news from North Africa. This was the Americans thing. I haven't noted, I think, El Alamein. Oh, yes, we have. Yes, 5th of November. I've just passed over it. We whack Rommel in the Western Desert, 8th Army. 5th of November. That would be El Alamein. Then the Americans landed within days at the other end.
Do you think that that sort of external event did have a significant effect upon the morale?
There was no doubt at all about that. And you felt that there really could be some hope of winning the war. One had never doubted in theory. One had never regarded us as possible losers. On the other hand, it looked, until this kind of bit, as though it might go on forever. You could see yourself sitting out a decade in uniform waiting for things to turn up. And here they were turning up. After I had been in the army, what, just a year and 2 months? We talked about the structuring of the courses. I noticed that on the 12th of November, we went to the village later and went to a pub and celebrated the end of being in a battery. Presumably this was the most basic training battery. And also, for the first time in my life, I got... Well, the first time since school, got actual reports. I noticed that I got 77% and was 6th in the end-of-A battery exam. And the major's note on me says, quiet and serious, a good brain if he will use it, which is a double-edged sort of compliment.
But however, at least it wouldn't go to your parents.
Oh, no. No. And we moved into B battery, a large bedroom. Feel unsettled as a cadet subaltern. Now, I don't know what that means. It rather suggests that there might have been some technical difference between being A battery and B battery, as though being in B battery was a minor sort of promotion, cadet subaltern.
It's conceivable they had a system of cadet government. In other words, they created a hierarchy. amongst cadets with under officers, junior under officers and senior under officers who would be expected to organise their fellows to some extent.
Yes, or we may have indeed taken turns to do it. We all got accustomed to holding some authority.
It could have rotated, yes.
I've put Saturday the 14th of November, hellish morning, as a cadet subaltern in B Battery, various introductory lectures, a regimental run at 12:20, then get ready for my interview with the CO of B Battery. He's the Honourable Charles Russell, barrister, and I think a KC in civilian life. He tells me that he's a barrister and that he's not too pleased that I'm noted down as being quiet, but a pleasant man nonetheless. And a very cosy evening in the YMCA by a gas fire reading Uncle Silas. Back to the yellow bedroom. Like all other bedrooms, it has a name by 10 o'clock. Sunday the 15th of November, hear victory bells in the village, the first time they'd been allowed to ring for the El Alamein. Feel thoughtful and unhappy, I don't know why. Go to the huge conservatory, which no longer has any plants in it. And then we go on day after day, the same kind of thing, dreary lectures on lines of fire, etc., but nonetheless a log fire in our bedroom.
It does sound as though, even though you were being taught intensively, you had leisure built into this.
Yes.
Particular.
Yes, that's right.
Course.
So that's right. I think, to be fair, I think that people would use their leisure in different ways, and there may have been some people who had less practice in learning things intellectually who needed to use this time to keep up.
Mug up. Yes,
to keep
study.
Mug up or keep up. Whereas those of us who were more accustomed to learning things quickly through practice probably had more leisure time for reading other things. But it was a well-equipped place. I see a glorious hot bath. Well, I mean, the thought of that would never have arisen in my first year in the army. Sorry.
Did you find any part of the training difficult?
I think the real answer is no, I didn't. No.
So it's just a matter of application.
Yes, that's right. Oh, you had the difficulty would have been if you had been psychologically or otherwise resistant to it, in which case it could have been purgatory. If you were flexible and young and willing to go along with it, then you enjoyed it up to a point. One even welcomed the physical activity. I put on Tuesday the 17th of November, gun drill relieves the monotony of lectures. And gun drill is slightly energetic and disciplined, so for that to be welcome suggests that lectures must have been rather boring.
Well, anything you do is boring if you do it for long enough.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Did they follow the normal military practice of training brains in the morning and arms and legs in the afternoon?
That hadn't occurred to me. I don't know. I really don't know. Looking back to the 14th of November, I mentioned a minute ago, it was the we seem to have done introductory lectures in the morning and then a run through right at the end of the morning, 12:20, and interviews in the afternoon. So it could have been they used our bodies when they're at their most energetic in the morning. Don't forget also, of course, that this was winter time. It would be dark by about 4. I can't remember what the state of putting clocks on or back was during the war. I've forgotten. But it was certainly the darkest part of the month of the year. And anything that needed outside vision would have to be done in the morning. Yes, I mean, another 20th of November, you see, morning, PT and gun drill. Afternoon, go out in truck, choosing what would make good gun positions. That's the point you were referring to earlier.
basic kind of tube.
Yes, that's right. And we had a miniature range. That was the other the thing, I had puffs of smoke.
Did you do much work on, on night tactics and so on? Because the British Army was rather keener on fighting at night than the Germans were, at least allegedly.
How interesting. I didn't know that. I learned this now. I didn't know. I don't remember whether we did specifically night tactics. I just assumed that we were taught tactics, and if this happens to be night, you do it slightly differently, sort of thing. But I don't remember a specific subject area of night tactics. Maybe the infantry would have had it.
Oh, certainly, yes. It would be very different for the infantry. For the artillery...
And we fired our guns willy-nilly, dark or light.
But at night, normally, a battery in support of a battalion would have its guns trained on the defensive fire.
That's right.
Location. So
that's
that
right. You had to try to locate this before it got dark.
Indeed. And do your ranging.
And then be very alive to the movements of the infantry during the dark hours and be in close touch with the infantry company commanders, our battery commanders, and the infantry regimental commanders were in constant touch, of course. And if anything went wrong on that front, it was disastrous, as it once did later on.
And do you remember that being emphasised at Alton Towers, the fact that the infantry and artillery had to work hand in glove in the closest intimacy?
Oh, yes. Yes, this was integral to the training of gunner officers, that you were in support of the infantry, you were not self-contained. Yeah.
Presumably that's why you, one of the reasons why you did quite a lot of infantry tactics, so that
yes,
you have some understanding of what they were up to.
That's right, that's right. Yes.
Did you find that the Op 2 course got easier as it went on, or became more demanding?
I don't remember any particular peaks or troughs of that kind. It was a fairly steady thing. You got, in a sense, more tense as you got towards the end, but you didn't want to fail.
Having invested so much.
That's right. I mean, it was getting towards the end of a fairly long process, and I see that at the end of, near the end of November, we had to pack feverishly and go off to firing camp in Wales. We had to, and this was one of the hardships of toughening up for potential officers. We had to run to march at the double all the way from the station at Penman Mawr to the firing camp, and settle down in a foul barrack room with oil lamps. And the next morning, it's getting cold weather now, end of November, we had a freezing lecture on explosives and had to double everywhere. Why we had to double everywhere there, I don't know, unless it was to keep warm. Then we let off every conceivable kind of bang in the mountains and back down the mountains to a good supper. And we had to do all kinds of hazardous physical things. Yes, of course, this was not a gunnery firing camp. It was a toughening process, because I remember vividly the fear that I think I shared with others of having to be made to run down very, very steep mountain slopes, not allowed to walk down them, not allowed to go on your bottom. You had to run down them and jump over stone walls at the bottom. I've put poor Emery broke both his wrists over the wall at the bottom. So it was for real. It was really pretty daunting stuff.
Did you have to run on scree?
Well, a lot of this was scree, yes.
So you were doing scree running?
Yes. I didn't know it featured as a special thing. It just happened to be scree, yes.
With no prior training for this?
No prior training, no. I don't mean it was that it was perpetual scree, but I mean there were
patches
of scree and then patches of sparse vegetation. But I remember very clearly coming down steeply, having to run with stone walls at the bottom. You were supposed to vault over these, and this is where poor Emery came to grief.
Presumably he chose the wrong bit of stone wall.
Something like that. And then it was not guns. I'll tell you very briefly what we did do. The next day, Tuesday, day of firing, rifle, Bren, Tommy gun, Sten. Then 2-inch and 3-inch mortars. Fine weather, pretty tough course, lovely scenery. A lorry takes us to one place, and then we have to double back to where we came from. Evening out in Llandudno, that was our break. The next day, battle inoculation using live ammunition. Captain Livingstone Booth's skull is fractured by a grenade. So things actually did go wrong. Double from Llanfair Fechan back to Penmaen Mawr. Still no rain, fortunately.
So this is really a standardised battle score, isn't
yes,
it?
And yes.
The kind of thing that infantry would have been doing as well as...
Indeed, I can see no difference unless they did more of it. The next day, very energetic day, battle schemes. I have to be platoon commander. Eventually, we have to shoot the rapids on foot in an otter hunt, which I find wickedly difficult. Stagger into Penmaen Mawr, go to the WVS and have a walk along the seafront. Splendid. There's Friday and Saturday, 27, 28 November, supreme test, in a truck to Bethesda, then a ghastly 12-mile climb over Snowdonia, doing various exercises and schemes en route. At 4 p.m, we start cooking our own supper in the open and shiver by a fire ad infinitum. So it goes on. Fireworks and very lights rouse us from cold huddle at 1:45 a.m. Then start off on a dreadful route march in the dark, sleepy and sore. Kalman smashes his ankle. The nightmare goes on and we arrive back at 5 a.m. We used a railway line as our guide. Maps were not allowed. We smelt bread being baked in a wayside bakery in the early morning. Breakfast 9:30. Hand in kit and spend morning cleaning weapons into Llandudno and go to a film, Shores of Tripoli, which I think was Bob Hope, I'm not sure. Milk bars, fish shop, bus back. Sunday 29th, up late, pack, look at the sea, march to the station and have a boring journey back to Alton Towers, getting off at Crewe and having something to eat, but a marvellous reception back at Alton Towers with dinner laid on and log fires, etc., and we hear Churchill speak. November 30th, terribly boring morning of lectures, afternoon a bit better on Colonel's map reading scheme with trucks and a good deal of running following the trucks. I'm very glad I kept these diaries. I wouldn't have remembered any of this at all.
What happened? Was there a series of phases of development, getting more and more tactical as the Oxford went on? And was the concentration on the physical early and the more cerebral later, or was it intermingled?
I thought it was fairly well tied up together. And obviously, when you went away for a purely physical week, like the one I've just described, that was abnormal. Normally, there would be a better mix of the mental and physical. A typical day, back at Alton Towers, good day, gun drill, morning, then mini-range, that is mock-up of a piece of countryside, laid out as a panorama with shooting of imaginary guns and puffs of smoke where shells would have landed in real life, then corrections to hit the named targets. Afternoon discussions and exercises in mental arithmetic. lie in bed and read about Handel in the evening. And the next day, good morning, nice subaltern, Lieutenant McLaurin, in sole charge of our squad now. Afternoon, beagling, very healthy. The beagles never catch anything anyway, so no moral scruples arise.
Was there, presumably there were sports afternoons all the way through to keep you fit?
Yes, that's right.
Fit.
That's right. There was football and beagling. There was a choice, but if you chose to beagle, you could pretty well get off anything else, because they had to keep these damn dogs occupied.
Was there any justification for beagling given? Were you told that it was a good way of learning to...
No, none at all. It had no education justification at all. It was a matter of making these dogs earn their keep, and it was carrying on what I think I was told was an HAC tradition of having a pack of beagles.
You see, it was an HAC octu. Was there a predominance of HAC personnel on the staff?
I wouldn't know, because I was